the province's quality assurance subdirectorate of the Western Cape. Just going through the written submission which I sent to Parliament, the main core functions of NAPISA, the one which I alluded to in my written submission, is that of providing training and workforce development. And what I basically did in my written submission was to give specifications to what type of training that is and what type of workforce development should occur, what should NAPISA be responsible for within the field of quality improvement. And if you were to read that table on the submission, you would see quite a few specifics to quality improvement that I mentioned, including lean management, plan, do, check, act approaches, and having health systems approaches to the daily challenges our healthcare professionals face. So I'll be fleshing that out in this presentation. And what I'll be doing is I'll be answering three questions. The first one is simply, what is quality improvement? Secondly, how is quality improvement beneficial to healthcare? And how has it been beneficial to healthcare in this country? And then thirdly, the third question which leads on is, why should NAPISA have a National Institute of Quality Improvement? So, honorable members, so I said I'm a medical doctor and I'm hoping to specialize in public health. But I came into this world as a patient, and I most likely will leave it as a patient, as will most people in this room. And so I ask, when we discuss quality and we look at value in healthcare, the most important thing is to take a patient-centered approach, and that's what we believe in public health, and it's what we try and impress on our clinical colleagues. I want to talk to you about a healthcare journey to illustrate to you issues of quality in our system, not just any healthcare journey, a real one that did occur a few years ago, and not just a real one, but one that was quite close to my heart and the reason why I went into public health. So you can't see properly on the screens, but it's in your printout, a picture of a lady standing in front of a house. So this lady raised me. She's not my mother, but she fed me, she clothed me, she bathed me. And we refer to her as Akka, which is auntie. So Akka was 60 years old in 2013. She presented to a level 1 facility in Durban. She had recently found out she was diabetic and hypertensive. She was feeling unwell, had a headache, body pains, wasn't sure exactly what was wrong. She attended the facility and she was admitted. The doctor didn't exactly know what was wrong. He knew that she had some form of heart failure, but not sure why. She was okay. I was speaking to her from Cape Town. She would call me and say, Dr. Shrikant, I'm feeling okay, I'm going to get better, don't worry, you must come back and I will cook for you when you get back. Eventually what happened was her cardiac failure got worse over time and she eventually fell because she was delirious. Her bedsides did not have safety covers. It's not possible in some facilities. And she had a fall. She injured her jaw. She was delirious for the rest of her stay in that facility. With the deterioration over time, she was eventually referred on to the secondary level facility, which was Mahatma Gandhi in Durban, which was also a hospital I worked at with very good people. There was a 2-week delay in that referral simply because the person at the level 1 facility couldn't get hold of the doctor in charge to refer. And at the level 2 facility, they found that level 1 had actually missed something. So my aunt had gotten a hospital-acquired infection. I had access to her blood labs, being a doctor with an MP number, and I saw her infection markers going up and up and up, and her cardiac failure was getting worse over time. Eventually, she required referral to a level 3 facility, which in Durban is King Edward's Hospital. With all the chaos of her healthcare journey, she was lost in casualty. My family members couldn't find her when she got to King Edward. But the doctor that did see her eventually noticed that she was acting different. Her face was skewed to one side and she was lame after having an infection and all these chronic comorbidities for so long. She ended up having a stroke in King Edward Hospital, which is quite fortuitous. King Edward is one of the one of two or three hospitals in Durban which has a CT scanner. Unfortunately, when the doctor who was seeing her tried to get a CT scan booked, she was told that the proper processes had not been followed, and she had to be referred back down to level two, to be referred by an internal medical doctor. So these are not issues of resources. These are process issues with our healthcare professionals. The next day, I got a call from the doctor to say it wasn't looking good. I should prepare my family for the worst. And a few hours later, she demised. It was Christmas Day on 2013. She wasn't a breadwinner. She didn't earn much money, but she was the center of a household. And I know many people in this room would have similar stories. And so when we say in the National Development Plan that the public health system cannot sustain quality, it's not an abstract term. These are people's lives and the lives of our family members that we cannot sustain simply because we do not have quality in the system. So when I say quality, we're talking about the extent to which a healthcare service is able to meet the expectations and the needs of our patients. It's a complex concept, but it comes down to whether or not we are able to provide the services which are effective and safe. Quality assurance is a term that you might have seen, and it's something which we've embarked upon as the Department of Health. It looks at meeting the basic needs of safety in an organization. And I stress that, the basic needs. It's a compliance exercise where we have people from outside coming to measure hospitals on various measures, national core standards or ideal clinic, to make sure that there are basics in place. But there's another step which we might not know about, and it's called quality improvement. And it's very different to quality assurance. It's very clinical in its methodology, and it aims to identify gaps between the current service delivery and service excellence which we hope to achieve. It encourages our healthcare teams to look at structures and processes that they work with every day, and it requires actual healthcare teams, doctors and nurses, to define values and patient-centeredness for themselves if they are to improve their practice over time. So quality in the healthcare sector was defined in 2001 by the Policy on Quality in Healthcare, and back then they would tell you the problems that I have illustrated. Our healthcare professionals are making avoidable errors, there's variation in services, diagnoses are not always accurate. Even when there are resources available, they are not efficiently used, and I can attest to this as being an intern once upon a time. Our referral systems are inadequate. Technologically, we are not able to communicate efficiently with each other. We have drug shortages, waiting times are through the roof, as we know. And we have poor record keeping. And we measure these deficiencies in lives lost and cost that escalates. And the solutions are there. We were asked in the policy to look at evidence-based practice, to adapt our healthcare teams to understand their places in a complex organization. The policy said that healthcare teams needed to be engaged and provided appropriate training. We needed to invest in quality improvement systems. And we needed to actually perform health system evaluation and redesign, which is a key public health intelligence function to build capacity for this quality improvement. But quality improvement is not simple. It requires at least three things. Leadership, it requires learning as an organization, and it requires an ability to create organizational change at the level of healthcare facilities. This is a graph which depicts quality in healthcare services. So the broken line is what would happen before national core standards quality assurance measures. And what you see here is that there's a spread of hospital quality, a lot of them falling into the poor category. With the institution of quality assurance measures, we're trying to move to the solid black line, where we at least have safe and acceptable healthcare. But quality improvement looks at how do we change our workflow processes as healthcare professionals to achieve good and excellent levels of care, not simply acceptable. How do we actually do the best we can with the resources we have? And there's a methodology to this. We forget sometimes as doctors, nurses, physiotherapists, we're scientists at heart, and we're taught science on an individual level, how to diagnose and manage and follow up treatment plans. But what quality improvement advisors teach healthcare professionals is to apply the scientific method to healthcare services. And if it were a national core standard, we were to ask ourselves, what are we trying to accomplish? Are we trying to decrease waiting times? Are we trying to prevent infections? And what is the percentage decrease we want to achieve? And then we're asked to measure ourselves over time in iterative cycles, where we look at the data that we've generated, and we look at our workflow processes in cycles. In month one, how many patients did we see in this casualty? How often were we seeing them in the time that they needed to be seen? How often were patients waiting an entire day to be seen in casualty? And there are certain principles and tools along the way that you might have heard of. One of them is lean management. It encourages healthcare professionals to look at value from a patient perspective, to analyze and improve the process flows, like I have done for that case, and to continuously improve on clinical processes, reduce waste, and pursue perfection. So it turns out that this methodology has already been applied in South African services, although in a fragmented manner. I'm going to take you through three examples very quickly, looking at the most critical areas for patient-centered care that the National Department of Health is interested in. You might have heard of, you obviously know about the ARV program and South Africa's PMTCT program. We have the largest ARV program in the world, and we've registered some major successes. What you might not know is that this has been achieved through the use of quality improvement methodology. So the National Core Standard asks us to make sure that we have prescribed medicines and medical supplies available, and a host of other measures, but it doesn't say how we're supposed to go about doing that. The National Department in 2002 started the PMTCT program. After 3 years, they evaluated and they found it was largely ineffective. After 3 years of rolling out ARVs to mothers who are HIV positive, they found that rates of infection were still 20%. One in five children were being born with HIV. So the National Department of Health called on quality improvement advisors on provincial departments of health and academic units who are also trained in quality improvement. They piloted quality improvement methodology with various districts around the country, from urban Cape Town to rural KwaZulu-Natal. And they formed learning networks where they were able to teach quality improvement methodology. Several QI pilot sites adapted the guidelines that National had given according to their own contexts. And once they had developed plans that were working, they developed an accelerated plan, which then went national. And I'll show you what that did. So over time, they had pilot phases for QI projects at specific facilities, and bottom-up, they built their policy to a national one. And over time, they decreased rates of infection from 23.2% down to 2.4% in 10 years. It was unheard of, and it's a major improvement that we're proud of to this day. The second example I want to tell you about is how preventing healthcare-associated infections. The National Core Standard says we should have strict infection control practices, and we should have policies and programs in place, but it doesn't tell us how we do our work as healthcare professionals. So there is already a quality improvement methodology being rolled out in Western Cape and Gauteng and all private facilities called Best Care Always. It's a grouping of best practices, and they're all based on evidence, which has resulted in dramatically decreased rates of infection. They're quite simple measures related to inpatient processes. The ones that I have up on the board are related to surgical site infections. So it turns out if you are able to train nursing staff and doctors in learning collaboratives to do simple tasks together, you can decrease rates of infection. Our maternity unit here in Cape Town was able to decrease their septic rate by 73% in 3 years. They prevented 75 septic seizures each year. And a septic seizure is something that can either leave you with a hysterectomy or it could kill you. And so that's what they prevented, and that's the cost saving and the lives saved that was able to be generated. It was a similar process where we were able to get teams together from hospitals, workshop exactly the data that they needed to generate, change healthcare processes, and then eventually monitor our data over time. And that's where the value of the process of quality improvement comes. Staff at our maternity unit were able to show actual decreases in rates of infection over time. And that's key to changing culture and changing practice in our facilities. The last example I have for you is looking at reduced waiting times at emergency facilities, which is something that we're in dire need of across the country. I've worked in casualties where patients wait 8-10 hours just to get a blood pressure done. The National Core Standard asks us to have methods to sort and see patients as soon as possible when they seek care, but it doesn't tell us how to do that, how to structure our working day. So what the staff at Chuan Air District Hospital did was they got quality improvement advisors in. They identified that prolonged waiting times was an issue for them, and they wanted to look at the root causes for that. So they came up with a variety of quality improvements. They instituted a triage system. They looked at referral communications with their local clinics. They standardized their referral guidelines. They made sure the stock was available, especially emergency stock and resuscitation drugs and equipment. And they reorganized their duty roster, both admin staff and medical staff, to make sure it was aligned to service pressures, end of month, weekends, to make sure that they had the staff to see patients on time. And over a 6-month period, they changed their average waiting time in that casualty without any further resources from 9 hours to 1.5 hours. They didn't add any more people, they didn't pay any more people, they didn't get locums. They just simply analyzed the problems they were facing and they monitored their data over time. So coming to the end, it's a fair question to ask, why a National Institute for Quality Improvement? I currently work at the Quality Assurance Subdirectorate of the Western Cape, and I stress quality assurance because we do not have a quality improvement unit. But what you'll notice on screen is that there are many countries that have public health institutes which have quality improvement units. Clinical excellence is in Australia, NHS improvement is part of the UK, and the CDC has a division called Public Health Performance Improvement, and they're responsible for teaching this methodology to their public health workforce. In the Western Cape, we have Collaborative Healthcare Improvement, which is a very new unit, but they're analyzing referral flows and efficiency of patients. And we're hoping that they're going to show data on how we're improving patient care and safety. There's lots of NGOs working in the space. You may know of Lean Institute Africa, Health Systems Trust, the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, and Best Care Always. Feeder Care and Catalysis are two organizations in the United States which has embarked on a journey of lean management in healthcare to improve services without cost. The reason for a national institute, it speaks to the ability to coordinate our learning as a department and as facilities, and to sustain that learning over time. As the quality assurance point person in this province, I can tell you that you can attend to a facility so many times, but eventually there's just not enough capacity to maintain. We are not able to monitor the quality improvements that are done. We are not able to share best practice across the country as a national body would. So they would be responsible for training healthcare professionals, for standardizing workflow processes, for piloting interventions as the PMTCT QI program did, and then scaling up to a national level. And it's important this is owned by the national, by a national governmental organization, because we really want to lead from the front. We can't have external advisors coming in to tell us how to treat our patients. We need to develop that capacity in-house and lead from the front. And that really speaks to institutionalizing patient-centeredness. As opposed to monitoring compliance, we actually want healthcare professionals to buy into the fact that they can actually change the system. And so for my last slide, I'm going to point out to you the gap. So we need to build our own roots. And I say that because we've defined quality through the National Core Standards and the Ideal Clinic. We have put systems in place to measure quality compliance, and I refer to the Office of Health Standards Compliance and the Council and COSASA in private. But what we haven't done is we haven't put systems in place to continuously improve healthcare quality across the country. And I would posit that that is the place for a National Improvement Quality Institute. I refer you to the National Development Plan, which states the health system should be effective and efficient, and it should provide quality care for those who need it. It states a root and branch effort to improve the quality of care is needed. And I put to you that a National Institute for Quality Improvement should be that root from which you grow branches and which you develop quality in our healthcare service. Thank you. There is additional information on further pages with references and further resources if you require, and my contact details are at the end of the slideshow as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Peter. Why I said initially I don't want to, if you are not here during the course of the day, I don't want to disclose you.
Thank you.
The purpose of today's sitting and that you said you want to make a presentation, it was more of pointing us to the bill itself, where, what are the recommendations,
yes.
Where, I don't want to assume that by virtue of your presentation, you support the bill.
Mm.
But we would have appreciated that you say in this clause, this is what
yes.
I think that PISA will, but the call is not on me, the members will interact with your presentation. But I thought that I must say that because in the presentation, I'm not implying that it is not an important presentation. But it is not a presentation for today, but
okay.
it is fine. Because in the center you are saying you support the plan. I would have appreciated if before you say thank you, you say, having said all what I have said, I fully support the plan. But nevertheless, members are here, Honorable Ndaba, Honorable Maise.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, firstly, I want to appreciate this presentation. But I think I want to agree with you, Chair, in terms of our expectations as the Portfolio Committee, especially regarding the bill. We would love to hear from you what inputs you want to make. Not today, because already today we have made your presentation. Maybe if you can just make a submission later on, because we are still going to work on the bill, so that all the things that you have raised here in terms of NAPISA, what inputs do you want to make? Because I have seen you have made many. You have presented many things that are of good quality that we need, you know, in our health facilities. But as for today, for the presentation, I'm sure we're not going to be able as members to say maybe this one you are talking to this clause, you know, because there are clauses there. If you can just go through those clauses. Yes, and just make your own input. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, I should have, my apologies. This session, which is clarity, citizens, and comments, you allow them, so you must, but you will allow them to make them, and then you will respond other. It's not, then, okay. Honorable, myself.
Thank you, Chair. What makes you think that there could be an improvement in the way patients or the environment in the hospitals is treated to avoid hospital infection? Because it looks like there is nothing that has been done according to what you have written here. It looks like it just lays us fair. Everybody can just come and do whatever they want. Yeah, I thought there were guidelines and things like that. That's question number one. Because strict hygiene, I mean, doesn't need capital outlay. You just need water and soap and towel and or disinfectant. So. But it looks like we need a school of hygiene to learn these little things like those. Now, what happens, is it because there are no registrars who looking at Shepherd in this intent to make sure that they do what they're supposed to be doing or what is happening. Because that could be another problem. I mean, if you don't have anybody who's more experienced than you and who will take responsibility and make sure that you do what is supposed to be done, you end up being maybe lax and not doing what you're supposed to do then.
No, thanks, just to speak to the submission, not the presentation, to the submission, just to get a clarity on the proposal that is made in the submission, that instead of the five divisions that are proposed in the bill, you are proposing that we must add two more, which is healthcare process improvement and health informatics. Can you just speak to those so that at least you understand how do they relate to this whole system, so that we're able to understand how do they fit into the work that is supposed to be done by NAPISA as a division on its own. That's one issue. And then the second issue, if you can also just clarify whether you think the issue that you say we must add as the key function of NAPISA, in your view, do you think they are not covered? Is that what you feel? That is your three, that is your saying was at 3.1Y, which includes to analyze and improve healthcare services delivered. Do you think it's not covered as part of the function in some of the functions that are stipulated there? And why do you feel strong about it? So that at least we've got a better understanding, and we're in the same better understanding with yourself, so that when we accept it, we know what is it that we're accepting to be included into the proposed amendment that you have proposed. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you for the questions, everyone. So the first and the third honourable members asked me to clarify the submissions. If you will allow me, I can do that second. The second question was, what makes you think there could be an improvement, especially in terms of hygiene and healthcare-associated infections? The honourable member referred to basics of hygiene, water, soap, towels, not necessarily requiring any capital outlay. This is a very interesting question. What makes me think that an improvement is possible is that there is something beyond the basics, which compliance measures are just not able to capture. And that's the science behind healthcare processes, which moves faster than policies and guidelines can. So yes, obviously there are basic hygiene practices that need to be followed in our facilities. But in terms of improvement practice, what surgeons, anaesthetists, and nurses have found is that if you apply standardized protocols, right, which are not within it's not compliance exercises. And I'll go through them. If we make sure every patient is washed, if we make sure patients do not shave and they use scissors to remove hair before an operation, if we monitor blood sugar and temperature, and if we give every single patient antibiotics before they have an operation, that's when we decrease their sepsis risk by 73%. It's not a compliance issue, and even if it's protocol, it doesn't necessarily mean that protocols are followed. protocols are different for different medical schools, for different provinces, for different facilities. And the only way to actually change practice in a facility is to show clinicians that these changes actually make an improvement with data. And that's the quality improvement methodology. Moving on to the submissions question, and I'll go back to my first slide with the submissions on them. So the clarity around the two divisions, and I know that I'm being a bit bold advising more divisions because divisions require budgets. But I know that the functions should exist. A quality improvement, process improvement division should be, or the function should be part of NAPISA. And specifically for the reasons that I've stated, we need to show our clinicians, our healthcare providers, how to improve quality, how to empower themselves to change the systems in which they're working. Quality is not something that is simply imposed on them, but it's something that they deliver on a daily basis. And the second one is a health informatics division. The committee may be better placed to understand what access the National Department of Health has to health informatics. At a provincial level, our health informatics division is responsible for generating an electronic health record for the province. They've been very successful to this on this point, and it's going to change patient care. And I would love to see something similar happen on a national level, whether that's National Department of Health or whether it is NAPISA. But that is a public health function, as it speaks to data usage around healthcare. And those are the key functions that I feel are not covered in the current format. And I do understand that the universities have had similar input. The divisions that are proposed in NAPISA speak to the burden of the quadruple burden of disease. But there seems to not be an overarching public health intelligence function. How do we use the data that we're gaining from epidemiological surveys, from our healthcare processes, to actually improve our responses to the problems we face? And those are the two divisions, and those are the reasons. I do feel strongly about these issues. I feel that clinicians should be able to analyze their work processes and own quality improvement for themselves. Thanks.
All right, thank you very much. Is there any other questions? It's safe to say, I can see that we've been joined by four persons that I don't know where they are coming from, who are they. I will start with you, lady, at the back. You will use the mic, and then I will come this side, because we are to know who is with us.
Good afternoon. My name is Zuki Sokota from the PFAM at Rhodes University.
From this?
Public Service Accountability Monitor at Rhodes University. Okay. Lethal paper 1024.
Good afternoon. My name is Elsie. Other way.
Good afternoon. My name is Deanda Mugugujo Sendo. I work with Shri Computers at the Western Cape Department of Health. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Comfort. I am a monitor with the Parliament Monitoring Group.
I think very much we are done for today with some of the presenters we have put off. But I'm sensitized that the lady from Rhodes, if I can correct you, was going to present tomorrow. I want to check getting if it's comfortable, if members are comfortable that we allow you to do your presentation today. If it's fine with you.
The only trouble
Madam Chair, is that my colleague who assisted on the submission is only arriving tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. Sorry, that's my...
No, that's fine. Very much. I think this was the last presentation for today. There are those that have put off who still see, but for tomorrow it is the two as per the program, as per our program and our agenda for tomorrow morning. We set again 10 o'clock, same day. Thank you very much. As our guest and the department are delivering, I will request the committee to just 5 minutes.
Pardon, Chair. Afternoon. Chair, we have copies of all the comments that were made when the bill was published for comment. So we made copies. I think they would also assist the Chair to know who made comments on what. So you tell us at what stage you'd like to have them, because we've prepared those. But we also have, because it's now required that for any bill that is published, you must conduct what is called socio-economic impact assessment, SIA. We also have a copy of SIA so that you can see what the impact of this bill will be socially and economically. So we made copies of those.
Copies are available. Okay. You will indicate to the staff so that as after we have just guests, our housekeeping will get the one. Thank you very much. Our guests tomorrow, 10 o'clock, same venue.